Welcome to the Health Edge, translating the science of self-care. I'm Mark Pettis, and with my friend and colleague John Bagnulo. John, good morning, buddy.
Hey, good morning, Mark. It's great to see you.
Great to see you as always. We have in our last few podcasts, John, looked at the really important relationship between muscle mass, lean body mass, and strength, metabolic health. And how lean body mass is one of the time-proven predictors of longevity and quality of life. And as we've talked about in many, many podcasts, metabolic health, as characterized by normal blood sugars, normal insulin levels, normal blood pressure levels, a lean waistline, low triglycerides and high HDL, the connection between all of those attributes of metabolic health and lean body mass and strength is powerfully strong. And so today we are going to look at creatine, as a supplement, and some of the evidence that has supported creatine, and that really dovetails nicely with this concept of muscle mass and metabolic health.
Yeah, I mean, I would say creatine is probably one of the more underappreciated micronutrients, nutrients, however you want to classify it. But it's really underappreciated, and I think it has benefits that most people are unaware of, Mark, in terms of how far-reaching they are in different areas of our physiology. I mean, certainly it plays a huge role in strength and in a person's ability to to gain lean body mass, which, as you just said, is so protective. But wow, I mean, some of the other influences that creatine has on our health are really remarkable, especially brain health, neurological health. And it's very, very difficult for people to get the amount of creatine that they probably need on a daily basis for a variety of reasons. So I think it's an awesome topic, and it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, and we'll come back to this connection between creatine and brain health, cognitive health, degenerative neurologic disease risk, which is a really hot area of research right now and rapidly evolving. So great that you brought that up, John, because this is a much bigger story than just than muscle mass and strength. How would you, for someone sort of new to this topic, John, how would you help them understand what creatine is? Where do you find it
Yeah.
in the body? What does its role seem to be as we
Yeah, well,
understand it?
sure. I mean, I think the most basic and important place to start is to help, everyone understand that we've got three energy systems, or three different ways that the body can generate ATP or can use ATP for energy, right? Most people are aware of things like glycolysis or the Krebs cycle, which generate ATP from the food in our diet. But then you have this very, very immediate and the most rapid source of energy in the body, which is the ATP PCR system. So, creatine, and more specifically, phosphocreatine, can be bound to ATP, and it provides the body with a very, very quick source of energy that is being used all the time. It's not as though we only use it when we're doing something like high intensity, like a sprint, or doing some type of resistance training. No, we're going to use the ATP PCR system. This adenosine triphosphate and phosphocreatine molecule is going to be split, and ATP is going to be generated from that all the time, around the clock. And our brains actually use that for a much larger percentage of their energy than probably any other tissue in our body. So it's an energy, creatine is really intricately and critically involved in this most immediate energy system. And the more creatine that we have available to the body, then the better our phosphocreatine ATP stores are going to be. So, it starts there, Mark. And if you have, limitations in how much dietary creatine that you get, the body can make it from The body can make creatine from amino acids, but it's not a really a an incredibly efficient system, and there are limitations to that in terms of how much we make. And there's some evidence that we make less as we get older, even if we do have all the amino acids necessary to do that. So it's an endogenously produced molecule. It's not as though we have an RDA for it or anything like that, because you can make it endogenously in the body, but it certainly helps to get more of this creatine already made, ready to go from our diet. And the richest sources, of course, are red meat. And then after that, animal protein, you'd get into things like small fish. Like creatine is found in really high levels in mackerel and in sardines. Those are some of the highest, richest sources of creatine after you get out of the red meat world. But it's found to a lesser extent in things like poultry and other fish. Eggs have very, small amounts. Dairy products, small amounts. Red meat is far and away the greatest source. And obviously, a lot of people don't want to eat red meat every day, Mark, for different reasons. And a lot of people don't eat small oily fish on a regular basis, or things like, shrimp and shellfish. So your richest sources of creatine are quite often limited in the diet. And so that's where people, if they're not making creatine endogenously in their body from having adequate dietary protein and the right amino acids, then they, sometimes are limited by the small amounts that do come into their diet. So it can be a rate limiting factor to a person being as strong, carrying the lean body mass that they ultimately should or need for a high quality of life. And as we'll talk, like you said a little later, brain health, it plays a big role there as well. So it's a fascinating molecule, given the fact that we can produce it in our body if we have all the amino acids necessary to do that. But as we get older, that kind of drops off, right? And so then we're left at a place of almost deficiency. And if we don't have enough coming in from our diet, then it's one of those things we can assume you're gonna have some consequences. And one of those will be we might not be as strong as we could. We might not carry as much lean body mass as we should for optimal health. And at the front of the brain, we may not have everything clicking there on all cylinders like it could be if we had a little more creatine. So I think, Mark, and I'll end on this, we're at a place now in terms of our understanding with creatine that it would be one of the more important nutrients to supplement with, especially if we want to improve the aging process.
Great overview, John. And as we connect the dots, creatine as a really important energy reserve, energy source. Not surprisingly, most of it is found in energy-intense tissues, right? So most of it's found in muscle, 90, 95%. The rest is predominantly in the brain, right? So we know these to be very metabolically active tissues with very high energy demand. And demand, while it may be high at a basal level, frequently will require these condition-specific increases. And so it's not surprising that red meat would be such a rich source. And I'm always struck, John, just as a biologist, how we always talk about one of the challenges in nutritional science is we look at very specific ingredients, a micronutrient, a macronutrient, and there's a tendency in that reductionist worldview to miss sort of the big picture, this amazing orchestration of molecules that nature packages. So isn't it interesting that red meat, we talk a lot about red meat. In addition to having this amazingly full complement of amino acids, which are ideal from the perspective of protein muscle synthesis, that it's also your greatest source of creatine, which obviously is an important molecule in enhancing how those amino acids are used to develop lean and maintain lean body mass. And then there's this sort of a bit more subtle issue of the mitochondria, right? We know these are mitochondria-rich tissues because they are so energy demanding. And when we in a moment when we start looking a little bit at cognition, The mitochondria have really become kind of a central area of research and basic science and clinical research. And when you begin to consider the fact that creatine phosphate and that metabolic pathway that you described could be a really important system, biochemical system for mitochondria in those energy-rich tissues. So much of what we know drives chronic complex disease and degenerative neurologic diseases can be traced in some way to disruption of mitochondrial function. So I love the way these things sort of connect those dots, John. And as you so importantly pointed out, it's really hard when you look at the research and sort of that dosing level that seems to optimally promote these health benefits, many people just are going to fall short. And I couldn't agree with you more, John. When I was researching this, there were over 500 peer-reviewed articles in creatine as supplements go, and that sort of wild west of uncertainty around quality of the research. Creatine really sort of rises to the top in terms of the quality of the research that supports its use, its benefits, and as we'll touch on, really a remarkable safety profile. This is a very, very safe molecule. And I thought maybe we could briefly touch on what I often hear as misperceptions about creatine, one of which, John, just to start on that path, as a kidney specialist, I was frequently asked about the potential for adverse effects of creatine on the kidney. And many people might know or might not know that when we assess kidney function, we do that with a blood test that looks at that essentially that level. Your creatinine is the blood test, and creatine is a precursor to creatinine in the kidney. So that connection often leaves people leery that taking too much creatine might overwhelm the kidney and create some toxicity. And so that how do you address someone that approaches you with that potential concern, John?
Well, I mean, I have a really interesting story. I won't take too much time with it, but when I got a before my PhD, I got a master's in public health, and one of the things you have to do with, depending on the program, you just kind of go out in the community, and you may also work on other fronts. I would go speak to high school student athlete, groups, organizations, might be made up of parents at the beginning of a season. So you might have an auditorium with, I don't know, depending on the high school, you might have a couple hundred parents in there that want to hear a little bit about the upcoming season and what's really important for their student in terms of their health. And there'd be a couple different speakers there. I would do that. And sometimes I'd go to universities and talk to their athletic departments about different aspects of sports nutrition. And this is going back there, like we're in 1990, 1996, 1997, right? And creatine had been around at that point for around 3 or 4 years. It came, creatine really became available in like the early 90s. And I had the good fortune at the University of North Carolina, because I was minoring in exercise physiology, that I actually was part of a study that was conducted there on creatine. As a graduate student, I enrolled in the study. I saw, immediate personal benefits to using creatine. So I became a believer early on, Mark. This is like, again, mid-90s. And then when I, again, as towards the end of my MPH program, I would go out and I'd speak. And I was amazed, Mark. I was amazed at the number of parents, the number of athletic directors at different places that told their student athletes they were not allowed to take creatine. Now, again, you speak, I think, so wonderfully about the safety and the overwhelming body of evidence that demonstrates the safety of creatine in comparison to so many other things that people eat and take that have very, very shady, right? Shady research, to say the least. So, what's fascinating is that it's an incredibly safe molecule. And yet today, 30 years later, there are still people, to your point, Mark, that think it has adverse effects on renal health, that it will cause, undesirable skeletal muscular changes like excessive cramping, dehydration. And really, I'm going to say that in most cases, it's the opposite that's true. I actually consider it for even a young student athlete to be one of the most protective supplements that they can take. I recommend it for all of the pitchers that I work with on in my coaching, baseball coaching, because it makes the body hang on to more water. And that's really beneficial for connective tissue, for skeletal muscle, especially if you have, potential for repetition, use injuries. I think it's one of the most protective things. And I just find it, again, fascinating that a lot of these parents who might send their kids to school with a certain lunch made up of certain things, they don't question that, but they really turn the spotlight on creatine. It's probably one of the best things their kids could be taking. So I, as you know, Mark, and you and I joke about this all the time, things get turned upside down in terms of what people are concerned about. A little knowledge is, sometimes a really dangerous thing. And that's the case with, I think, with creatine. Again, I think you covered it really well. This is a molecule that most people don't get enough of. It's got a really specific role to play in different physiological pathways. And when it comes to muscle health, it's indispensable. You got to have it, or you're going to have a higher risk of injury. You're going to have less lean body mass at any stage in life. So I think it's been well studied going back to the early 90s. And to your point, everything really checks out. Whether you're an athlete, whether you're a 70-year-old that's looking to have a higher quality of life, look, it's got benefits. It doesn't have any downsides. So, and again, as with anything, I think it can be abused. If you started taking 20 grams of this stuff a day, then I think that there is the potential for it to maybe work against a person in different areas. But even that is, is less clear. But I think you talk about 3 to 5 grams a day. Look, I think the research clearly supports it from not only from a performance or an improvement in health basis, but definitely from a safety standpoint. So it's it really checks all the boxes that we like to look at. And yeah, I just think that it's amazing, as I just said, how people question this, but don't question a lot of the things that are truly undermining either their own health or their kids' health.
Little bit of irony there. It's fascinating
Yeah.
how our perceptions are shaped and so often held as an absolute truth when in fact not grounded at all in truth. And creatine and sort of that historical perspective is one that definitely falls into that category, John. The 3 to 5 grams a day is clearly a well-established sweet spot, if you will, 3,000 to 5,000 milligrams a day. And people often talk about or maybe even debate the different forms of creatine. But at the end of the day, creatine monohydrate is what has been looked at in most of the studies. And creatine monohydrate is, the gold standard form of creatine. There are other forms, but they're not in any way proven to be better, more effective, more advantageous than creatine monohydrate. And I liked what you said, John, about, historically, often there was this tendency to want to load creatine really high doses, up to 20 milligrams a day, maybe for 5 to 7 days to build those levels up. I think the research is pretty clear today that there's no great advantage to loading, and that starting on a maintenance dose of 3 to 5 grams a day, I take 5 grams a day. I think you very subtly and significantly raised the point, John, that for most of us as we age, we do tend to have more anabolic resistance. We do tend to have to be more careful to create conditions that allow that muscle hypertrophy to optimize itself. And so I lean toward that higher dosing, at least for my age and my health goals. And it's, as we've talked about, extremely well tolerated. On occasion, I may hear somebody talk about a gastrointestinal side effect. And sometimes I'll tell folks if they're sensitive to it, maybe they have irritable bowel, they have some GI issue, that 5 gram a day, they might try splitting that into a 2.5 grams twice a day instead of a 1 5-gram dose. But rarely will a person find that sweet spot to be intolerable from a side effect standpoint. So that's, I think, really important. And then some of the other sort of anecdotal things that might come up that I'll hear about, John, is I think, and this kind of falls into the same sort of myth of the creatine kidney issue, is creatine as sort of an anabolic steroid. I think, anytime you talk about something that might help develop and maintain lean body mass, that it must be something like a steroid, which raises red flags. So how would you help mitigate those fears, John, from someone who is concerned that creatine is a steroid?
Oh, well, I mean, just molecularly, it's a pretty simple molecule. It's not a hormone. It's not involved in any of those endocrine pathways. It's basically molecularly, it's just something that, again, increases an energy system or the capacity to produce energy from this really most basic ATP PCR system. So it starts there. And because of that, it enables muscles to, again, hang on to a little more water, which again is protective. So it increases what we call cell turgor, the amount of water held inside a muscle cell. Very important for muscle health and preventing soft tissue injury. So it's got that big benefit. And then it's because you have more energy available to a muscle is going to be able to contract with a little more force. And then because of that, you're going to get, slightly more of these little tiny microfibril tears, which have to, when they recover, when a muscle cell repairs from that, comes back a little bigger and a little stronger. So really basic structural changes, not endocrine. There's no hormonal component to this. So it's, yeah, it's pretty far, far removed from the steroid type effects on health. And again, it's found in food in the same form that, that you're talking about here in terms of creatine monohydrate. It's just a really simple molecule that allows muscles to function, better, more efficiently, more effectively. And then when they recover from that bout of exercise, they come back bigger and stronger, which is obviously that's your goal with strength training. So really basic stuff here, and doesn't creatine's never been shown to affect lipid levels or have any influence on testosterone or things like that. So it's just completely removed from the whole androgen, testosterone, anabolic steroid discussion.
Yeah, so j good points of clarification there, John. And I will upload a lot of the studies and reviews for people to look at. But in general, they're very consistent in their outcomes of improved body composition with respect to lean body mass, measurements of strength, power, the velocity with which one can exert a force. And that research is consistent across the board. Some studies that we've looked at, John, suggest perhaps a greater effect in males than females. But I think that it's conflicting, and the overall metabolic lean body mass benefits, and I think we can begin to add some of the early data on cognitive and neurologic benefits, would make this an ideal consideration for men and women. And as you point out, John, and the research that has looked at younger adults and adolescents show it to be equally effective and very safe. So this has a really broad case use consideration across both sexes, across the age continuum, and again, just predominantly upside. And so I think more a good place to sort of bring this home, John, is to reflect a little bit on this emerging area of cognition. Some of the research that we've looked at, where one can actually measure creatine levels in the brain, show clear, we call them correlations. People with degenerative neurologic diagnoses, Alzheimer's, ALS, Parkinson,
Parkinson's, yeah.
when they're included in research that looks at creatine levels in the brain, you will see diminished tissue levels. And this sort of goes along, John, with the this energy deficit, this challenge of the mitochondria optimizing energy production in people with these degenerative neurologic challenges. And so when one gets more creatine and can demonstrate increases at the level of the tissue, the end organ, of increases in those levels in parts of the brain where it is measured, you do tend to see improvements in measures of cognition. And again, I think that this is very early in its in this research, but it's an exciting area because, again, I think it adds to this mounting evidence of degenerative neurologic diseases, not as necessarily separate, right, genetically influenced, but metabolic disruptions, fundamentally at the level of energy and bioenergetics, and creatine becomes a very unique player and a pretty much a easy consideration when one is looking for some additional things to consider along the lines of prevention or management of those issues.
I love the description of an energy crisis for the brain. I mean, we know that that's implicated in not only, as you mentioned, ALS, Parkinson's, and in general cognitive decline or dementia, but it's certainly a part of Alzheimer's as well. When the brain goes into, this energy crisis, then two things happen. It can't function properly, and it can't certainly maintain the structural hierarchy and all the pathways that are necessary for optimal function, right? I mean, it's that third law of energy. Everything goes towards maximum entropy, right? And so that disorder that's always something we're fighting, especially as we get older, has to be maintained with adequate energy stores in the brain. And the only way you're going to hold on to ATP is with having enough creatine to bind onto it, so you can have those stores present. But you touched on some other things that are really important. So I think it's very multifactorial. You mentioned the mitochondria. The creatine has antioxidant properties. We know that it protects the brain and neurons against oxidative stress. So that's a part of this story as well. You talked about Parkinson's. The dopamine recovery is enhanced with higher levels of creatine. So it's got just so many different layers to it. That go maybe a little further than just having a better energy state. That's certainly, I think, the most fundamental thing to understand. But then there appear to be some other benefits to having higher levels of creatine stores in the brain that kind of really spill over into some of these other conditions or diseases that we've really can appreciate other pathways in. Oxidative stress really is very destructive to the aging brain, as is, not recovering as much dopamine as we could ideally. So it's got a lot going for it, Mark, and it doesn't really have any downsides. So I hope our listeners, really consider adopting a modest dose of creatine as part of their daily regimen.
That's a great summary and conclusion. And I will, on our website, the healthedgepodcast.com, upload some of these review articles for anyone who's interested. This recording can be found on our website. It can also be found on YouTube. And certainly our podcast, The Health Edge, is on all of the media channels. So great to be getting into this particular topic, John. And I was thinking, we just had daylight savings time where We're getting into the season of light, and we'll come back maybe with our next recording of a topic that's near and dear to both our hearts, and that's the importance of light, of nature, vitamin N, and circadian rhythms, right? All these things, you know, when you add creatine, 3 to 5 grams a day to a whole food diet, one that's very restrictive of high glycemic processed carbohydrates, one that maybe overcomes some of the fear of animal protein. Add that to some resistance exercise, as you would say, time under the load, getting a little more time outdoors. This is a great time of year to begin to put those pieces together. And in biology, the beauty of that is the amplification of 1 + 1 + 1, where suddenly you're looking at 10, 20. And this is a great time of year to be reinvigorating those systems that are alive and well in us, but need the right conditions to be optimized. So,
I like that, Mark. I think this is a time of year for great synergy, you know. So
definitely.
that sounds awesome. That might be a 2 or 3 part series on light
Yeah, I
and how
think
we
so. Yeah,
yeah.
we could run quite a ways with that. Well, John, as always, it's really great to see you and to learn from you and to share in this discussion. And we hope people find some value in these conversations. And we thank those of you for listening and tuning in. Be well, stay well, and peace.
Same to you, Mark. Thanks so much. Love you, man.
Love you
Talk to you
too,
later.
brother.